It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina are here. We'll talk about Google's new privacy terms of service and a couple of new apps. A Google Chrome extension that lets you remote access your computer from an Android device. And Google's new camera app. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 245, recorded April 16th, 2014. Stop poking me. This Week in Google is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 20% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIG414. And by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom is not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code TWIG to receive $10 off at checkout. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we talk about Google, the Googleverse, the Cloudverse, the Versaverse, the Inverse, and the Ebverse. And speaking of Bobverse, to my left, Gina Trebani.
Hello.
SmarterWare.org. That's her blog. And, of course, ThinkUp.com, now public, that analysis program that kind of checks in on your Twitter and Facebook feeds. Hi, Gina.
Hi, we're actually at the top of Product Hunt today, or we were for a little bit, and then we got knocked down by some men's fashion thing. You know, I don't know, maybe. It's actually a really cool app. I hadn't heard of it before today, but it actually started a pretty cool conversation. It's a really well-designed app. It's kind of like Reddit or Dig for new products.
Oh, this is neat. And did you see some traffic as a result?
Yeah, we did. We did. We definitely drove a few signups, which was exciting.
A daily leaderboard of the best new products. And you can actually get this in your mail. This is good.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It seems very skewed toward the web and says some good stuff there.
I'm voting up ThinkUp. Oh, I got to sign in first.
Oh, we sign in with Twitter, but I don't believe it posts. It can't post tweets for you. So it's read only. So I always appreciate that.
It's good. This humble piece of internet. This is cool. I really like this. All right. So Jeff Jarvis is also here from City University of New York, CUNY as it is known.
Hello. From home.
He is in his home today. And we are talking about the Goog. Who wasn't here last week? You weren't here last week, Jeff.
I wasn't. I was the bad boy last
Welcome
week.
Welcome back.
And then days before that, I was on Twit, which I always love and is wonderful.
Love that.
But boy, did I get junk from your listeners.
You got hate mail for what?
Oh, both sides. Both sides.
Positive and negative.
Number one, a lot of negative, but also some positive. One, because of if you dare breathe the word Apple without angelic tones behind you, some people will have to.
Apple.
And then the whole San Francisco bus thing. So on the one hand, some said that I was a capitalist pig, awful. Other people said that that I was a commie or something like that. I didn't understand. I was nasty. Good for you for good sense. Oh, geez, people wrote me long emails. Like I have time for more emails on this stuff. When I made a crack about the Supreme Court decision, mean you could give to more damn Republicans. Somebody wrote me this long email. I was joking.
Oh man, don't bring it all up again. We'll just get more.
Well, that doesn't happen on Twig. It happens on Twit.
It's a bunch of lefties listen to this show. I don't know.
Yeah, we're all in the world.
No, you know what? Because everybody knows you, Jeff, and we know what.
Discount everything I said.
No, but yeah. I mean, we just know you. So we don't, But if you're a stranger, then people don't understand. They get angry. But no reason to get angry at Jeff. He's a sweetheart.
Now I know why you avoid politics on Twit.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. But let's, as long as we're talking about it, good article. I thought, very good article on TechCrunch, how burrowing owls
really
lead
good.
To vomiting anarchists.
Incredibly long, people. Unbelievably long. but really good understanding of the whole circumstances of development and home prices and the economy of San Francisco. Really good work.
Kim May Cutler wrote it. And I'm, you know, the TLDR summary of it actually has nothing to do with burrowing owls. That's really the reason that Silicon Valley can't expand to accommodate all the new workers that are being brought in.
It's a gag. It's why Google's not allowed to build apartments next to the Googleplex.
Right. But the real issue is that as she writes, 80% of the city of San Francisco isn't oriented to add housing stock. It's a NIMBY problem. It's not a tech problem. In fact, the tech industry is only 8% of San Francisco's workforce. So this whole anger at Google, while I understand it, is misplaced.
What is a NIMBY?
Not in my backyard. And so she uses as an example Telegraph Hill Dwellers Association, which is a neighborhood group. I used to live on Telegraph Hill. It prevents any development there because the bulk of the homeowners, which only represent, by the way, 35% of San Francisco's. So let's take the first 35% of the San Francisco residents. They own their home. They are benefiting greatly from this shortage of housing. Their housing is worth a hell of a lot more than it should be, millions, because of the scarcity of housing. So they don't want development. Rent-controlled tenants, which account for another large percentage of this, are paying rent so far below market rate that nothing that could be done with construction could possibly help them. So she says about 80% of the city just says, we don't need more housing stock. Tech's only 8%. They're not causing the problem. Then there's the issue, of course, of Silicon Valley. Lots of people, lots of jobs created there, not lots of housing. They're for a number of reasons. So,
and who necessarily wants to be forced to live there, by the way?
Nobody wants to live in Mountain View. That's why Google has buses.
Yeah.
But they can't anyway. There's not enough housing, but even close.
Nowhere near.
So this
and,
is
and
a...
Let's start with the basic fact of San Francisco that some people don't grok unless you live there. It's 7 miles by 7 miles. It is bounded in.
It can't grow because it's surrounded by water.
It can't grow. It's water around three sides. On the fourth side, it's Daly City and South San Francisco, which is no space for expansion. There's a big leap from there to livable places south. Not they're not livable, but, you know, San Francisco level livable.
Well, you know why I'm in Petaluma? So you want to know why we're in Petaluma? We lived in San Francisco when Abby was born 20 years ago. We wanted to buy a house. We couldn't come 20 years ago. Yeah. Couldn't come close to affording a house. We started driving north until we could. Went right through Marin, which was equally expensive, and got to Petaluma, where housing prices were relatively low.
Well, when I left in 1981, my children, I couldn't nearly afford it. But a coworker and I were going to buy a two flat in an neighborhood, and couldn't afford it. And I worked for the San Francisco Examiner. I was a columnist on the San Francisco Examiner. I couldn't afford to live there.
I'm sure nobody watching this show cares. So, but that's. I guess it was a good article, and I think it really pointed out that these are complex issues that are not easily explained in on a protest placard. And it's complicated,
and certainly not worth assaulting a reporter for his Google Glass.
Oh my! Yeah, well, okay. Let's talk about that. I knew you'd want to talk about that.
Well, I also heard you had your continuing.
I hate glass.
Idiotic opinion based on the movie theater conversation continued into this topic.
Well, I don't think it's okay to beat up somebody because he's wearing Google Glass. Guy was walking through the Mission, right? He was on his way to 16th Street BART station. Everybody knows that area. It's a mixed neighborhood. There's families there. I like it. It's one of my favorite neighborhoods in San Francisco. But he was wearing glass. He actually was coming from covering the protests against tech workers. Somebody ran up to him, took his glass, actually ran away with it at first. So it's not clear if he was stealing the glass or what. But then...
I think there were shouts of glass, glass!
Yeah, but then he gave chase and the glass was thrown to the ground and stomped upon. That's all there is to say about that.
So I have decided when I come to San Francisco next, I'm going to wear this in protest.
Kyle Russell was the... I think you're asking for trouble, my friend. And I don't have any problem with you wearing glass, obviously. But I think you're asking for trouble.
Well, but the thing that also upset me about the reporter, I think, bent over far too far backwards to say, oh, well, I want to understand. It was just too gushy liberal for, you know, Henry Blodgett, capitalist site, for God's sakes.
It was on Business Insider, yeah.
Yeah, geez, he had every right to be pissed.
Kyle Russell, I was assaulted for wearing Google Glass in the wrong part of San Francisco. They were just finished covering a protest, which I thought was kind of interesting. So,
I mean, this is obviously never okay, but I always, I don't know. It makes me wonder, even if the housing crisis isn't the fault of technology, it's interesting to me that technologists or employees of these big companies are so easily hated. You know what I mean? Like, what do they represent beyond these problems? Like, capitalism. I feel like this is, yeah, well, capitalism, but I mean, privilege, elitism, I don't know.
It's a new 1%.
Fracturing a culture, the new 1%. Yeah. I mean, it's.
You know, it comes down to a really severe problem in this country, which is income inequality.
Yes.
And whenever that happens, as it did in 18th century France, heads sometimes roll.
Oh, God, we're going to start beheading technologists now.
But, you know, you understand why the French peasantry finally revolted. All you have to do is go see Versailles and understand why they revolted against French royalty and chopped their heads off.
Well, there's a hot, though probably not terribly readable, book from a French economist called Capital, which is all arguing, Thomas Piketty, I think his name is. I just saw a great review of it in the FT that says that when capital and income reach this level, it doesn't stop until that happens.
Right. And then what happens?
And then you have upset.
Yes. Yeah. And I could understand why people are upset. I think in this country, maybe not uniquely, but seems uniquely, and our international viewers will tell me if I'm wrong, there is this notion that anybody can succeed. If you have brains, if you have persistence and ambition, that this is a land of opportunity. And as long as that seems to be true, I think people will put up with a very wealthy 1%. But as soon as it feels like you don't have a shot at it, like you couldn't be in that 1% in your lifetime, then I can understand why people would be upset.
Well, I think it's also the top 1% got, I think, 60% of the wealth growth in the last, I think, decade or two decades. That's where the inequality really hit. So you got a shot, but you don't have that shot.
There's also a growing sense that this is not a democracy. Saw this study from Princeton and Northwestern saying that the U.S. government does not represent the interests of the majority of the citizens, as our mythology tells us, but instead is ruled by those of the rich and powerful. Using extensive policy data collected from 1981 to 2002, sifting through 1,800 U.S. policies enacted in that period, and comparing them to the preferences of average Americans at the 50th percentile of income and affluent Americans at the 90th percentile and large special interest groups, researchers concluded that, shock, the United States is dominated by its economic elite. That's in 1981 through 2002.
And the most visible of that elite now is technology, especially right there. Banking, there's plenty of other areas where there's a lot more money, but the huge paydays are happening in technology. And so there's a resentment of that.
And glass is a manifestation. I mean, I've had my cell phone, stolen on the subway before because I stood close to someone. It was sticking out of my bag. And that wasn't an attack on me as a person. That was just a regular, I got my phone stolen. Right? But with the glass represents a certain kind of, not only disposable income, but a connection to Google. Because, up until yesterday, you kind of had to know somebody or had to be handpicked in order to test it. And it's very personal, so it's on your face. So getting it ripped off your face feels like a much more personal attack than having your cell phone pulled out of your bag. Glass takes it to a whole nother level. Also, glass is, it's an accessory, let's say.
$1,500 accessory.
It's $1,500 accessory.
If you wore a $2,000 watch down the street, I don't think that...
Plenty of those in New York.
Yeah. Would you necessarily... I mean, that's talk about conspicuous consumption.
I mean, there was one of the placards put into that article, I think, was something from the, I don't know what it was, 80s, 90s of you know, let's go after all the SUVs.
Right.
You know, so it's a $60,000 car.
Right.
You know, there was a time when walking around with a Macintosh was obnoxious too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I understand upset over income inequality. What I worry is that technology, which technology is not uniformly good. It can go either way, but it is in many respects the hope of our species. That is how our species has advanced, and it is very important stuff. And I hate for it to be equated with income inequality to say,
amen.
You know, we got to shut this technology. You know, this Google stuff is bad because people are getting rich on it.
This is an issue very simply of taxation. If you want to, I think as we have fewer jobs and less security, I personally believe we need a single payer health system. I believe we need a better safety net.
But are you saying that socialism mobility is the cure to this?
No, I'm saying that there are some that we don't have the essential safety net that the Europeans, for example, have. And I think that if we assume that people are going to have fewer jobs, less seniority at jobs, less stability at jobs, then having some security for mobility, I think, is important. And that's one way to redistribute wealth is you tax it. It's the only way. What do we, you know, it's like the fight in Europe over Google's taxes that I have a fit about, because it's not up to Google to decide how much to give. It's up to governments to decide how much to tax and what to then do with those proceeds. That's the real fight here. And of course, our political system is, back to your point, Leo, it's a political fight, and our political system can't bear it.
Is there an obligation as a technologist? I mean, let's face it, glass really does look frivolous, expensive, and there's a certain amount of arrogance that is imputed by somebody wearing this camera that they could take a picture of you at any time. Should we tread more carefully, should we avoid things suggesting? Like glass because
so
they imply
that makes
this
me very uncomfortable. Is that becomes so PC doesn't extend just to language; it now extends to innovation. We shouldn't innovate certain things. We shouldn't be trying certain things because somebody might not like it. Oh God, no!
Well, not because somebody might not like it because it is in fact extremely expensive, of dubious value. You said it, Gina. It is a statement in the power balance.
Yeah, we need to do just the opposite, right? We have to work toward, like you said, that technology isn't about income inequality, but it is, right? Like, access to technology is what matters. And the fact is that not everybody has access to technology. And that's part of, I think, the backlash to glass, is that, you know, only the special folks who have enough money and who have the connections could get it, right? So I think it's up to us not only to innovate, but to work toward, you know, opening up access to all sorts of new technologies or demystifying and explaining it. You know, the camera on glass, like the ability to be able to take a picture of someone, of someone's by winking, that is a very powerful thing. You know, you can dock someone basically by winking, right? That is a powerful thing.
And I can see how people might feel invaded by it.
But, I'll say that there's nothing subtle about taking a picture with glass.
I'm going to
invoke it. Going back to 1890 and the Kodak camera and the Kodakers. Until we have the norms that deal with this,
right?
If I walk down the street and see, even in a public street, and you know my views about publicness, and you see a 12-year-old girl walking, and I just went up to her and took a picture, wouldn't we all agree that'd be wrong? Doesn't matter what camera I use, what means I use, that would be wrong. Are norms unstated?
What if glass? Here's somebody asked.
You know it.
Somebody in the chat room asked an interesting question. What if glass didn't have a camera? Then it's just a display.
It'd be even less useful than it is now.
Okay, but I would be less in. I would find it less intrusive.
It would.
Well, then
I think,
then it's
change the perception.
You're connected all the time. gee, aren't you obnoxious? You're connected all the time.
It is we kind know of obnoxious. It's, you know what? Let's face it, it's obnoxious. And while I'm not blaming Kyle, and of course it's wrong to take something off somebody's face and smash it, that's wrong. So I'm not saying it's Kyle's fault. You know, my daughter was carrying an iPhone 5S in Mexico 2 days ago and got mugged at knife point.
Oh, I mean, sorry, is she all right?
Oh, yeah, she's fine. Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, but...
That's serious. That must have been really traumatic.
Fancy phone. She's carrying around late at night. It's not her fault, but it's also prudent to take off your fancy jewelry in the subway. Don't you, you know... My first wife would always turn her ring around in the subway.
It's prudent, but you should never blame the victim.
But it's not the victim's fault. Never. But at the same time, prudence would dictate that one doesn't flash one's jewelry on the subway.
But yeah, I wouldn't take my MacBook out of my bag on the subway and use it. Some people do, but I wouldn't.
People do on the civilized path as well. But what we should be decrying here is not that. We should be decrying is any part of a society where that happens. I mean, I lived in New York in the end of the bad days when you were constantly cautious and constantly worried. And you know, you could say, people getting mad at you rich people moving into New York. Well, that's just clearly wrong. New York is so much better off now than it was. And San Francisco is far much better off than if the entire tech industry moved to Cleveland, which could use it and would be grateful for it. I think we have to be really careful here of not recognizing whom to blame. Now, if you're committing a crime, that's who you blame. If that person is angry, well, all right, we can discuss that, but that's no justification for the crime. Never, never.
Oh, no, and I'm not saying that. And if you get robbed on the subway because you flashed your jewelry, it is your fault. But can't we have both things? A, it's a terrible thing. Nobody should commit crime ever. Horrible. And at the same time, don't be stupid and walk down dark alleys in the middle of the night. That doesn't mean you're blaming the victim. Just don't be stupid. What? I mean, can we have both thoughts at the same time? Or is it either or? No, I should be able to do anything I want.
It's a tragic prudence you have to do.
It is tragic. But welcome to the world, for crying out loud.
Okay, but first recognize the tragedy of that. Recognize that's wrong, that you even have to think about such things.
I agree. I should be able to flash my 5D Mark II anywhere I want. I was walking down the street in Argentina about midnight in Buenos Aires, and somebody tapped me on the shoulder. I jumped. He said,
Leo.
He said, don't carry your 5D Mark II on your shoulder in the middle of the night in Buenos Aires. Are you insane? And I immediately went, oh, no. And I didn't get mugged. I didn't get mugged, but I was very lucky, apparently, because I could have easily.
I mean, this is being a woman in the world.
Yeah, right.
I mean.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It stinks that this is the case, right? But of course, I'm always circumspect. Always.
Aren't you?
Of course.
And I taught my daughter to be careful. My wife taught my daughter to be careful. She said, you know, don't, if you're walking in a, don't go in a deserted parking structure at midnight. Have the guard go with you. I agree we shouldn't have to do that, but we do. And I think it's probably a bad idea, Jeff, if you come out here to go down Mission Street wearing your glass. That's not quite so bad.
I want a twit crew following me.
I'll protect you.
The power of the camera.
All right, I'm taking these off now. They're not very comfortable.
Yeah, and you look like a dork.
Hey.
No, I got nothing against glass.
I look like a dork with these glasses too. So
do you think how many people do you think bought glass yesterday? Is it still on sale? Or was it one day only?
No, it was one day only, and they say they sold out. But of course, that's.
I wonder what that means. 1,000, 10,000, 5,000.
All we know is that the white went first.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah,
but we don't know what the supply was.
They've been emailing me like updates. I don't know. I must have gotten on their PR list and from someone at Google. Hi, all. Just wanted to let you know we're not sharing the specifics around the sale, as many of you have asked for numbers. Oh, they want to share the statement. And the statement is we're getting through our stock faster than we expected, and we decided to shut the store down. So the fact that they're not sharing numbers makes me think that they're not low. Probably not very high. Yeah. Right.
If it was a million, they'd be saying a million.
No doubt. No doubt they would be saying that. So I think they're making it seem
I'm thinking
like.
I don't think tens of thousands.
That stock. I think they stocked.
Now, are we out? Is that it? There's no more glass ever?
No. They're not saying that. They even said they might extend the sale. I saw that in some quote somewhere. I think the question is, would they sell any? Here's the question. If they are going to come out with a consumer product imminently, like right. I would say 6 months, and it's going to be a hell of a lot less than these, then if I just bought these, I'd probably be a little pissed.
Right.
Yeah.
And presumably they're going to make improvements. I still think they're not doing a consumer product. This is all research for Android Wear, and there is no product here. They know perfectly well this is not a mass market product. I really don't think people want to wear these.
No, listen, I own them, and I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a gimmicky thing.
And I have them in my briefcase every day, and I think, should I take them out now? Should I, be doing something with them? And I,
so
my problem is there's a speed bump to get them hooked up and connected and doing things, and then I'm afraid it's going to go into my phone contract, and that's, I just say never.
Is it safe to assume, as 8-Bit Steve does in our chat room, that this means that it'll be a while if they are going to sell them? Because they wouldn't, go, like 2 months from now, say, oh, and hey, guess what? We got them for $200.
I think that sounds right. I think that sounds right.
That means we got, this is like a year off, if at all. I'm serious. I just don't see this as a consumer product.
This as it is? No.
No.
But the idea of an always on, see, here's the problem. You a few minutes ago said, I don't know, having a camera around all the time. I don't know. But on the other hand, rationally, you have to agree that having a camera you don't have to pull out and turn on is a wonderful thing, as long as nobody knocks you in the face because you used it rudely. Okay? So the problem there is to get past the norms and the structure, and maybe it needs a light on it to let you know you used it or something like that. But the idea of having a camera on all the time is a wonderful thing. If somebody's wearing a big old GoPro on their head, I never hear anybody complaining about it. Hey, you got a GoPro on, because you look like a complete dork and you know you're recording everything on it, right?
I don't know about that. I think I don't think it's an unreasonable part of our social contract to say, and if you're going to take a picture, you should have to pull out a device that's clearly designed to take a picture.
The issue isn't the pulling out. The issue is the knowledge. So if this thing had a big red light on it and went, woo, 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 he's taking a picture, then there'd be no, you would have disarmed that complaint. You have a different complaint, but you disarmed that complaint.
Or a flash, or a visible flash.
Yeah.
I think glass is going to come out in 2015. I think it's going to be for certain kinds of people, security guards, for doctors, surgeons, teachers. And, maybe when you go to the amusement park, they let you rent a pair so you can take a bunch of pictures of your, while you're on the roller coaster or whatever. I mean, I think it's very much an experience kind of accessory. I don't think that every single consumer is going to have them, but I think there's going to be some sort of place for them in different uses.
There's a place for glass somewhere, a place for glass. You could wear it in your hair or ass. Wear that glass. No.
You're David poking us.
I'm poking you.
You're totally poking me right now.
You've been pogged. Let's take a break. Gina and Jeff are here. We're going to talk more stuff, more tech stuff in just a second. But first, a word from Shutterstock, a great place to get those beautiful images you need for your blog, your presentation, anywhere where you use photos. You should be using royalty-free stock photos, royalty-free stock vector drawings or images or illustrations or footage. Shutterstock.com, that's the place to go and take a look at so many beautiful images, 36 million images, 250,000 new ones this week alone. You've got to try the Android app. It is gorgeous. They also have an iPad app that won the Webby Award. This Android app's new. Goes on your tablet or your phone. And it's free to create an account, which gives you free content, a free photo and vector every week. And once you've got your free account, you can also browse through the selection. Of course, 35 million images, you've got to have a pretty good search tool. I wonder if they have Google Glass in here. Let's see. They must, right? Yeah, there we go. So there's a teddy bear wearing glass. Any image that you need, you can find at Shutterstock.com. And you can also use their search tool in unique ways. You can refine your search. Do you want people in the image? No? Yes? Only images with people? Do you want any particular gender, age, ethnicity, a number of people? Are you looking for a particular color? They've got a color picker. This is fabulous. Then you save those images out to the light box. You can share the light box with friends or just keep it for inspiration. They also have a footage tab right at the top. People, I think, missed that, so I want to highlight that. Right at the top, click the footage tab. You can see their beautiful video as well. 1.7 million royalty-free stock videos. You can buy images or videos in individual image packs or get a monthly subscription. But either way, I'm going to get you 20% off any package when you use our offer code TWIG414. Shutterstock is our choice for great quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Royalty-free, always great new stuff, curated, so it's the quality is superb. Multilingual customer support in more than a dozen countries and full-time throughout the week. It's Shutterstock.com. Try it today, and don't forget to use our offer code TWIG414 when you buy. You don't need it just to create a free account, but when you buy, so you get 20% off at Shutterstock.com. Gina Trapani, Jeff Jarvis, Leo Laporte. It's time, my friends, for the Google changelog.
Yay!
Yeah. The Google changelog.
Gina Trapani has the new stuff from Google.
Of course, after All About Android aired last night, a bunch of two big Android new things dropped.
It always happens.
First one's pretty big deal. Android's camera app got a bunch of new features, a UI overhaul, and now it's just available in the Play Store. The decoupling of Android's core features like keyboard and Gmail continues. It's now available in the Play Store, and it's got some pretty cool new features. So it offers photospheres, of course, for 360 views. This new lens blur feature, so it gives you SLR-like photos with like a shallow depth of field. And it does this, you know, without the extra hardware. So we were testing this earlier today.
So I'm going to take a picture, and the way it works, I've turned on lens blur, and the way it works, I take a picture. And then it says, slowly raise your device and keep the subject centered. So you're going to rotate it. And what you're doing is you're giving it some parallax. You're giving it, in a sense, two images, which is what our HTC M8s, the ones do, Gina, with two lenses.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In this case, you have to take the picture twice, basically. And then you can, how do you edit it? What do I do to edit it now, Chad? Chad, help me.
Go back. There you go. So find the one that you just took.
Yeah.
Next to the pencil, there's the...
I clicked the lens thing.
Mm-hmm. And then you
now I can choose what's in focus, background or foreground or anything, which is a little bit more sophisticated than the M8. And then I can also have a slider to reduce or increase the effect.
Here, let go of the slider, and then it yeah, it does it.
Yeah, it's not. Let me take a different picture and play with it a little bit. This one was in front of the. Actually, maybe I've already. Oh no, okay. So you were saying you can only save one image. It doesn't save the original.
So it's basically there's some way that it tags it as this is a image that is a blur image.
Right.
And then you can re-edit the amount of blur or what is selected at any time, but then it only saves out one. So let's say you wanted to do a progression of blur or two different types of blur. It really only saves one image. It doesn't clutter up your gallery with multiple images.
Right. It does a good job. And what's interesting about it is HTC One only has two planes. It feels like it only has two planes. This has kind of an infinite number of planes. You see the twit is out of focus here, but I could have made it in focus. So I think it does a nice job. Maybe arguably better than the HTC. You also get the photosphere, right, Gina?
Yes. You get Photosphere, and there's panorama mode with high resolution, and it's just got a really nice kind of UI. It kind of gets out of your way. Of course, the UI, you have to swipe in from the left in order to see the different options, which took me a few times to figure out.
You had to show me. I couldn't figure it out at all.
Yeah, you swipe in from the left.
I kept pressing
the HDR button. Yeah. So, yeah, they say it's an updated UI that gets out of your way. It gets so out of your way that it's hard to find the settings. But once you get used to it, once you know about the swipe in. Yeah. It works on phones and tablets running 4.4, so that's only KitKat.
That's a new feature. He's taking a video, and it is telling him to turn your camera into...
Portrait mode shots. That's good.
It lets you do it, but it's kind of like
it's
a subtle reminder.
It says you don't have any taste.
Exactly.
Wow.
And there's some UI subtleties where if, you know, after you finish taking a photo, instead of it going down to the corner in a little sort of, you know, you're recording, there you go, it swipes off to the side and it kind of pops in just like
that.
Oh,
you see that?
Yeah.
So, hey, here I am.
It's kind of a subtle reminder that you can swipe over at any time to get to your gallery.
No slow-mo in the video. It's kind of a limited feature set, but, you know.
It's actually kind of nice that it's not so many. It's a pretty short list. The research blog did this great post about how they implemented lens blur and how they're basically estimated 3D maps of the objects in your photos to figure out where the lines are.
Pretty cool.
And I have to say, compared to some of the photos that I took with the M8 and used the HTC Change Focus app, these seem to be better, or at least just as good.
Yeah.
You can see, like in that picture up that's up on screen, like the edge of her hair, which is in the foreground. And then that is really kind of clean and nice and looks more, I think, what you get out of an SLR. So they did a really nice job with this. I'm sad that it's KitKat.
Is that because
only,
it has more data? You're not just taking two photos, you're taking a swing. Is that giving it more data to really get more of the shape?
Yeah, to estimate where things are. I think because you move your camera so that the camera can figure out what's far and what's near based on what pixels move the most. This is my laywoman's view. But that's why you have to do that quick move of the camera.
It's cool.
It's what
free.
Else?
Why not? You know, have it in addition. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. What else for Android? Another huge app drop, the Chromoting app. This is the Chrome remote desktop app, which is now available for Android, which lets you access your Chrome desktop from any Android device. So this was available for Chrome, so you could from Chrome control another Chrome device, but now this is now available for Android. So you download the app, the Android app, which is now in the Play Store. And you can do remote assistance for another user, or you can access your own Chrome desktop. And I set this up just before the show. So you need the Android app, you need a Chrome extension, then you have to install Chrome remote desktop host software, you have to set up a PIN number. I mean, of course, there's a ton of security issues around remote access on your phone. But once you've got it all working, it shows up on your Android device as a remote desktop that you can control. You move your finger around, and that's the mouse. You can, you know, make the keyboard appear. It's really nice remote desktop app, also free. And then finally, Gmail got a new button, an insert photo button, and this is in the web interface of Gmail. So if you click on the insert photo button in your compose box, you will get to choose between all the photos in your Google Plus account, which if you have auto backup enabled, which I do and I totally highly recommend, it's basically all the photos that are on your phone. It's really nice. You can insert an individual photo, you can insert an entire album, and in the compose window you can resize the image, which is really nice because we all know what that's like to get an email from someone with a giant, you know, image that's the wrong wrong orientation. So look for that in your Gmail compose window on the web. Now it's just an insert photo button down on the toolbar on the bottom. That's all I got.
And that's your change log with Gina Trapani. You know, I'll play with the M8 camera, comparing it to the Google camera. But at least it's nice you have the choice.
Do a face-off.
The nice thing about the M8 camera is you just take the picture and the data is there.
Right.
You keep the original and you have the refocused. But I think you're right. I think the Google camera does a better job.
Yeah, and with the Google camera, I definitely moved the phone up because it says move your phone up. And I said, oh, too fast, too slow, not enough angle. And you don't get any of that from the M8, right?
Right.
With the M8, you just take the regular picture.
How pissed is HTC right now?
I don't think they're pissed. This was a feature that was in Nokia's Windows phones before HTC did it. I don't think they're pissed. I think that just, you know, there's other stuff there's no slow motion video. I think everybody knows, right, that Google is going to slowly make all the apps that are part of the Google Services module
Play Store. This feature, if HTC had known this feature was in the works, would they have added in that extra hardware and affected the cost and the profitability of that device? They could have, you know, invested in something else or made it cheaper. I'd be pissed if I were HTC. I'd say, come on, what kind of partner are you?
Maybe. Maybe. I mean, I don't know. They can say, like, hey, this phone takes better pictures. Look, right. There's two cameras. How could they not be better? Right? I mean, it's like, it just sort of markets itself.
Right.
I don't know.
And it's easier. It's easier just to snap and that's done. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has other features. It has this like 3D feature that if you take, when you take a photo, you can go into this like 3D mode. I think that's what it's called. And as you tilt your device, you can kind of see around the subject. It's kind of gimmicky, a bunch more. I think.
No, there is a bunch more. Yeah. Yeah. I like, I'm still happy with the M8. I mean, who knows how many they're going to sell and whether it's going to save HTC anyway.
Yeah.
But I'm also glad that Google's released, now that they've released the keyboard, they've released the launcher. They released the camera. They've released the calendar. That was the first thing they did.
Gmail, right? That was also
Gmail.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an Amazon
Chrome, obviously.
Right. Well, no, I don't think it helps you on Amazon because Amazon has only what's in the Amazon store, and I bet you they don't put these things in the Amazon store. Plus, you need, as Gina has said, you need a very recent version of Android.
That's true. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Now launcher.
Yeah, I mentioned the launcher. That's right.
Yeah, Leo said that. Well, Photos, I guess, ships with.
Photos is new, yeah. Although all
Hangouts,
Android phones
which has taken over
Hangouts.
SMS.
Yep.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. It's an interesting shift
it's
in
great.
Their strategy.
I don't have to worry about any of that.
Because you have a Windows phone.
It's all just in here. Yeah.
No, because you have a Nexus phone.
BlackBerry. I have a Nexus.
It is kind of amazing how many of my apps are Google apps.
Even on the iPhone, people use Google apps. It's, Google's
Google
got
Plus.
It, got it going on. They did change their privacy policy on Gmail to show a little bit more clearly what they were up to in scanning mail. Earlier today, on Windows Weekly. Well, that's the thing. It's just more of an admission that they're doing it.
It was a clarification, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
which they should have done ages ago.
Yes.
The clearer they, I'm actually going to speak to the privacy group at Google in a few weeks, and that's going to be my point, is they've got to be the best of breed, absolute best of breed about transparency.
Yeah, because if you, it's an explicit deal with your users, then everybody says, okay, I know what I'm giving up. This is what
the complaints have died down, except for these crackpots who are suing them as if they didn't know what was going on.
And Paul Theroux pointed this out. He declared victory for this Googled campaign. I don't know if that's fair, but he said, see, Microsoft forced Google to change your privacy.
No, the suit did it.
And then I think the lawsuits, and Paul mentioned that as well, the lawsuits as well. So what does the new privacy policy say? Let me get the actual language. If I can find it here, they basically admit that they're scanning your mail for advertising,
which we've all known.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's given any thought about this at all, whatsoever, knows this, right? Yeah, let's see what
Google does: scan all emails. Shock! Here's the. We want our policies to be simple and easy for users to understand. These changes will give people even greater clarity and are based on feedback we've received over the last few months. Here's the new term of service. Our automated systems analyze your content, including email. Now, actually, that's important. Not including can also be not limited to.
Mm-hmm.
So they analyze your content. Is that your Google Docs?
Does that mean your Docs? That's a good question.
Our automated systems analyze your content, including emails, to provide you personally relevant product features such as customized search results, tailored advertising, and spam and malware detection. This analysis occurs as the content is sent, received, and when it's stored. So it's almost like they're scanning all the time.
Well, and certainly for some of the, it's not just for ads. It's, for example, for malware and viruses and such. They're scanning that in your docs. Yeah, certainly they are. They say so. So this is an Uber scanning statement now. But the problem is by telling more, they told less.
Hmm.
This hasn't been in their terms of service. I don't understand. They'd never spelled this out before. This is not news.
They had to have. None of this.
They had to have, right? Maybe this is just clarity or.
Do we have the before and after?
I don't.
Well, that's the key. This is the statement, but this statement may not be that different from what it was before.
Well, this is, yeah, this is the new statement. I don't, you know, the lawsuits because there are rules about privacy. For instance, FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. And I'm sure, Jeff, you've come across FERPA because it's quoted all the time when I say, can I see my daughter's grades? Mm-hmm. They say, no, you may be paying for it, Dad, but FERPA protects her privacy.
HIPAA and FERPA are the enemies of parenting these days, among many.
Yeah, and they invoke FERPA a lot. So but Google knows my daughter's grades, I guess is the lawsuit. I don't think that equates to the same thing as a human being reading it. Let me see if I can find, I don't know if I can find
it. It certainly
original.
Doesn't. Well, and for that matter, your ISP knows it. It passes through. It's stored somewhere. That's an antiquated concept.
Well, and Microsoft is scanning that content not for ads, but for spam. And in fact, anybody mm-hmm. who fights spam is doing exactly the same scanning. They're just using it for a different purpose or a more restricted purpose.
I just posted the diff and the... in the chat.
Oh, you are good. Did you run a diff?
Well, no, they run a diff to their credit.
Wow, that is fast work. You fired up sed, awk, and grep.
Oh yeah,
and diffed it.
No, they post a GitHub style, that's colored.
Wow,
good for them.
Yeah, and so if you scroll down, you can see the new.
Okay,
cat paragraph.
So let me read it
that
because
says it's a.
The green is new, and the red is
crossed out. So when you upload or otherwise is cut out, submit. Da, 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 da. Now they added this green graph.
Boy, it's hard to believe that wasn't there.
Apparently, they did not explicitly say. Although they say it elsewhere, it may not have been in the terms of service. But Google has never made. A secret that they scan our mail for advertising purposes. So that maybe just wasn't in the TOS.
Yeah.
Thank you for the diff.
Yeah, sure. Anytime. Diff it up.
Diff it up. Google Now is going to let you know where you parked.
That's cool.
This is awesome. This is purportedly. This hasn't happened yet.
Oh, that's going to be cool.
But Google Now is going to guess when you've stopped driving, parked your car, and gotten out of your car.
It's easy.
And then it pins where you left your car.
Yeah. This is the last place we saw you after you stopped driving.
There's all kinds of data around this is useful. You know, here's, I want to see on Waze which gas stations people stop at most, because that's going to tell you where the cheapest gas is.
Well, they even know the prices, but you're right. That would be even another.
They do?
Data
How
point.
Do they know the price?
Yeah, because the gas stations post them. So this is an app. In fact, I reviewed it yesterday before you buy. It's a little dongle you put on your OBD2 port on your car. And then it Bluetooths to your phone as you drive. And so it knows all sorts of things about your driving, including nearby gas. And then it loads in the prices. So it sorts it by price based on gas stations must be posting this information somehow.
I had no idea.
But this also remembers where you park because, when you get in the car and start driving, it goes... Good morning. Dash is recording your trip. And then when you end, it says, Dash has stopped recording your trip. And then
that's in the APIs for Android, right? Like it'll tell you when you're driving, when you're walking, when you're biking. It'll sense the speed, I guess, which you're going and
See, I know where I've parked.
The kind of movements.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now it's, I know it's in a parking garage, so it's roughly there. I mean, I guess I could get close enough that I could beep the horn with my keys. But that's pretty cool. And that's built in. You see, I can even press the navigate button and it'll walk me to my car using Waze or Maps.
Oh.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's just an app. I think Now should absolutely do this. And I can't imagine why they wouldn't. Except for all those people who are creeped out by Google knowing anything about them.
This is the thing. I want to see people's faces when someone now is like, here's your car.
Google knows where your car is.
Let me take you back to your car.
This is the beginning of a service in which Google rents out your car while you're not there. And they'll just leave the cash on the dashboard.
And where you can get a delivery made to your car and Google can unlock the car for you.
Perfect. Just put it in the trunk. Google.
And okay, Google, please gas up my car.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. I love it. So I don't know. There was a story last week that Facebook was considering buying this company, Titan Aerospace, because they were going to, remember that Facebook wanted to do internet via drones. It's like a battle of the loony ideas. And I use the word loon intentionally because that's what Google wants to do, balloons. So Zuckerberg says, you got balloons, I got drones. Well, then Google buys Titan Aerospace and says, no, you don't. This is what happens when people have too much money.
So these things can stay in the air for 3 years.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Crazy.
Is it better than balloons? I don't know. Jet-sized drones that are intended to fly nonstop for years. Actually, Google wants to use them for satellites, for street view, for maps.
I see more uses for Google than Facebook. Facebook just says they want access. Google has maps and all this other data.
Well, Facebook was going to use it for that nonprofit internet.org idea, you know, to give the internet to everybody kind of thing. Titan would work closely with Project Loon. Basically, Google's going to take over the airspace, then see the howls. Solar-powered aircraft.
When we get to my German friends in a few minutes, we'll get to that, yes.
Yeah.
The howls have already started.
The howls. It's a howls. Let's take a break, then we'll get to your German friends. How about that? Our show today brought to you by LegalZoom.com. Not a law firm, but folks, if you want to start up your business, now's the time to do it with LegalZoom. LegalZoom provides a great solution, works with your tight schedule and your finances. The legal system is complicated. The last thing you want to do is, trust me, is spend a lot of time meeting with lawyers. I can just feel the clock ticking when I get three or four lawyers in a room and I go, you're $185 an hour, you're $185 an hour, you're $250 an hour, and you're $450 an hour. This is costing me thousands of dollars an hour to sit here talking with you. Not LegalZoom. LegalZoom's not a law firm. They can help you get the legal work done by walking you through the forms, LLC or trademark or will, Chapter S or C Corp, living trust. They get the job done right. And I can tell you that because almost exactly 8 years ago, I started this little company here called Twit, filling out the forms online. Didn't use a law firm, used LegalZoom. It was $99. Still is $99. LegalZoom has been helping families and small business owners for 14 years now. Just got an A-plus from the Better Business Bureau. They're good. I give them an A-plus, too. Call or visit LegalZoom today. LegalZoom provides legal help through independent attorneys and self-help services. It's not a law firm, but it helps you get the stuff you need done quickly, effectively. But, yes, it is effective. We are still using those same legal documents I created 8 years ago all by myself. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIG. You'll get $10 off at checkout. And they'll know you heard about it on This Week in Google. LegalZoom.com. Use the offer code TWIG. Oh, those Germans.
They've done it again.
Oh, those Germans. They're crazy.
So I woke up this morning.
Yeah.
And I got texts and emails. Looking, Jarvis, you have to see this. You have to see this.
People are now just baiting you, Jeff. You understand that.
That's fine. I enjoyed the herring in my mouth. The hook didn't feel so good, but that's fine. So, including, by the way, full disclosure, some Google people emailed to me. So Matthias Döpfner, who's the head of Axel Springer, which is a gigantic media powerhouse in Germany. It owns Bild, the largest paper in Germany, which I described today. And pardon me for the sexist double entendre here, but I enjoyed it. Bild is basically Fox News with boobs, as if Fox News has boobs. You see, you get it. So I'm sorry. I apologize for the sexist language, but I enjoyed the joke.
I don't even understand it because Fox News. Well, never mind. There's plenty of boobs on Fox News. Frankly.
Exactly. That's the joke. That's the joke, right? But in the only difference is in Bild, they're naked.
That kind of.
You get it. Okay. Yes.
Now I get
sorry.
It.
Sorry. Okay. Well, never mind. So this guy went off on a huge attack on Google and Eric Schmidt, supposedly because Eric wrote a piece in the same paper the week before in which he said Eric-y things. But even beyond that, it went completely over the top like nothing I've ever seen. And it's that what I say is that German business model of whining, stomping your feet, saying it's not fair, blaming the other guy. And so I kind of took after it and said that Döpfner practiced what I thought was public self-economic castration, because he was admitting he couldn't compete with Google. And so he's asking government to help, which is also, I got to be humiliating for the guy who heads a gigantic conservative powerhouse to be asking for government regulation, bigger government, government intervention in the marketplace. The truth is that they're just trying to push the European Commission to go beyond the agreement that Google came to with them. And so then he goes on trying to just make Google into a big bad guy because that's good for him. So he says that he compares Google, of course. He says the agreement with the EU, which allows competitors to advertise on Google in guaranteed ways, at guaranteed prices or price structures. He calls this protection money like the mafia, as if the New York Times would really allow the Wall Street Journal to advertise inside it. Certainly the Wall Street Journal would not allow the New York Times to advertise. Then he says that Mark Zuckerberg's view on privacy would come from the head of the Stasi, which I find offensive.
These German secret police.
Then he says that Google, quote, sits on the entire privacy of mankind like the giant Fafner in the Ring of the Nibelung. How's that for a German
insult?
Well,
I can tell you right now, you're not gonna hear that kind of literary reference in American polemic.
No, you're not. Fafner. And then he says, forget Big Brother, Google is better. So he complains about all kinds of things, including the fact that Google's self-driving cars will compete with Volkswagen.
What?
And Nest going into homes.
I got a Google Fafner. Okay,
Fafner. I tried to understand, and I can't understand it. I can't. I tried to go through the plot. It was like trying Game of Thrones.
Fafner was the son of a dwarf king, Hredemar, and the brother of Regin and Oter. He became a dragon and was slayed by Sigurd, but before he was a dragon, he was a dwarf with powerful arms and a fearless soul, and before he was a dwarf, he was a giant, so...
Well, basically, Wagner.
I have no idea what's
Thrones.
Going on here.
And apparently, he'd sit on his golden horde like a dragon is wont to do. So that's where.
So Dufner goes on and says that he frets about Google planning buying drone companies and planning huge ships and floating offices operating stateless in the waters around the world.
Oh, come on!
And one needn't be a conspiracy theorist, he says, to find this disturbing. So the bottom line is he's trying to egg the EU into pushing Google farther. He makes some really ridiculous proposals that he knows are ridiculous. He's a very smart guy, Dufner. And he says that Google should erase all cookies immediately after a session and hold no IP, which would enable – it would mean that it couldn't do any ad targeting. He says that Google should make transparent all of the qualitative data behind its algorithm, which of course would make it gamed and worthless. He says that we shouldn't be paying for things with our behavioral data anymore, only with money, which, of course, is a publisher's old model. And so the bottom line is it's just absolutely ridiculous. So it's spreading like wildfire around the German world. And I may have just put the entire audience to sleep with this, and I apologize for that. But I just find it amazing that the Google hatred that exists in a different way from San Francisco in Germany just keeps going on, and it's a cynical act by an old dinosaur who hasn't figured out the net, who just tries to demonize his competitor for being successful. So thank you for that moment.
Meanwhile, Google's first quarter earnings are in, and missed analysts' expectations, but did have $15.4 billion in revenue. So Fafner's got some gold to sit on.
Does indeed.
19% revenue growth year over year. Earnings per share of $6.27. That is lower than the analyst's estimate. And you know how important it is to reach the analyst's estimate of $6.42 a share.
Here's the scary part. The volume of ads was up 26%, but the yield, the price, down 9% because of mobile.
Ooh, interesting.
That's an inexorable slide.
We've seen that across the board too, right? Yahoo and Facebook as well. Yeah.
Yes, that's a big deal in numbers.
The only English translation of this letter is courtesy of Google Translate. Is that true?
Yeah.
And that's just I'm gobsmacked.
My translation varies a little bit from, but I wouldn't dare to. It was a huge.
I think your German's probably better than Google Translate.
It's bad. Google, but I've become lazier thanks to Google Translate, I'll admit.
Is it doing a better job? It feels like it is.
Well, one of the things that I didn't know was that you can now users can improve Google Translate and correct it, which I'm surprised they didn't that ages ago. It's pretty good. It gives you the sense, awkward grammar. And things will always confuse it, and genders confuse the heck out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And, capitalized German nouns confuse it greatly because it can't tell names as easily. So there's some stuff it'll always be weak on, but it's pretty darn good. I mean, and I can go to something in a language I don't speak at all and get a sense thanks to it.
Google made enough money that it can turn down government military funding from DARPA for its new robotics contest.
Well, I also did that as a matter of principle, I think.
I hope so.
PR. Well, and also PR to say. Yeah. I think that with owning robots and drones now, and given the NSA, Google's got to stay as far away from government as it can.
Yeah. These are the DARPA Robotics Challenge trials. They were in December. Google scored the most points. Actually, Google's new robotics firm, Shaft. Shut your mouth. I'm talking about Shaft.
Google go out of their way when the military was testing glass? Didn't Google go out of their way to say
they bought it
they're
from
just
us.
Like any other explorer? Yeah, they bought it from us. We didn't enable
it's
this.
It's a
or
sensitive
ask for this.
Thing in some circles. I know it doesn't bother me that they would be involved in military research.
Well, and then that came from DARPA.
Right.
Or ARPA.
Yeah. This is a two-legged robot that the Japanese Shaft team created that won the DARPA Robotics Challenge trials, scoring the most points across tasks that tested mobility, dexterity, perception, and autonomous operations. That's the one that always scares me.
I imagine Mark Penn now creating an ad campaign, don't get shafted.
You know, really, Google, okay, this is like wearing glass in the Mission District. Google, do you really have to make autonomous two-legged robots? Do you really have to be doing that? Let it be a little circumspect
okay,
here.
But here's the thing. So I was reading the stuff about and I'm jumping around the rundown, but another patent for contact lenses that act as cameras. Oh my God, then you don't know it's a camera.
No, but that's cool.
Well, okay. Oh, all right. So you can't even see it's a camera, and that's cool,
Leo. Oh, that's where this goes. Interesting.
The only reason I don't like glasses is because it looks dorky and it's clunky.
Well,
and
now we go back to
gives you a headache. If you could just wear it on top. I've always said a heads-up display. That's what I want.
So now we go back cameras to are fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now we're going to go back to our comic book days, Leo, and they're X-ray, too. But here's the neat thing about it in the write-up is that it imagined, the self-driving human, the blind person, who can now get connected to data and say, you're at the end of the sidewalk, the light's red. I mean, all these things that could happen could be phenomenal.
And Google is testing a way to match search users to their purchases at stores.
This will freak people out, too.
Piss people off.
It's anonymous.
Six advertisers. Wow. They're helping six advertisers as a pilot program to match the anonymous tracking cookies on users' computers to in-store sales information. How could they possibly?
I don't know.
It's anonymous. How could they?
Does it explain it, Ricky?
It involves AdWords. Google gets paid when users click on an ad, visit the advertiser's website, blah, blah, blah. They want to get paid when the shoppers enter a physical store.
Well, that's the holy grail.
Yeah. That's a $200 billion nut, according to Google ad executive Neil Mohan. The $200 billion nut that's sitting out there basically ready to come into the digital sphere. He's not a wordsmith. It doesn't say exactly how they do this, but so much for anonymized cookies.
So I'm signed into Google. I get an ad for Michael's Craft Store.
I click on
Easter baskets.
Yes.
I look at them.
Yes.
And then later that week, I walk into a Michael's, and I'm signed into Android with the same account I was signed into Chrome.
Oh, that's how. Bingo.
And then what happens? Do I get a notification? Oh, hey, the thing you're looking at is on sale?
No.
Or does just Google get a ping?
You don't get
Google
crap.
Gets a ping.
Google gets a ping.
Michael's gets a ping.
And Michael's gets a ping. Right.
Yeah.
Michael's
and Google says, cha-ching, because I got a ping.
I saw a company this week at Greycroft called Nomi, N-O-M-I, and they have beacons in stores. And so the first level of this is so they can just track traffic and find out how long people spend at things and so on and so forth. But then they just recently bought another company that does tie to unique IDs.
Wow.
And that's the holy grail in a whole kind of ways. Because then if you go to showrooming, I go after them. I say, if you're in showrooming mode, the presumption is if I walked into the store, look at the thing.
Yeah, because it can't tell if you bought it.
It was a lost sale.
It can only tell you showed up.
But now you do the reverse too, Leo. You go into the store, you look at the item, then you go home and buy it online. Now that gives the opportunity to give the store some level for credit for being part of that sale.
Yeah.
And stores become marketing space.
Yeah.
That's so.
Oh, so
it's
it can
the
go
reverse
both ways.
Of what you just announced.
Go both
it goes
ways.
Both ways.
Yeah.
Yes.
So here's the ARPA, the Shaft vehicle. This is autonomous driving. And this is the two-legged robot. This is not good. This is very
oh,
bad.
You're what? Why not?
The Terminator is just around the corner, I swear to God.
We'll see one of those
oh,
walking down
God.
The street.
Look at that. It's climbing up a ladder.
Wow.
You can't even run away upstairs.
That thing looks top-heavy, too. And well, those legs are working well.
Yeah. It's building a house. Oh, no.
If they made it the shape of a cat, no one would complain.
Yeah, this is search and rescue. Mm-hmm. Moving stuff out of the way. Yeah.
Wow.
Jesus. Friends, what you are now watching is the beginning of the end of the human species. Oh, sure. It starts by cutting a small hole in drywall.
Oh, that was a whiteboard.
There's like 31 tasks. These are all the tasks.
Is that Chaz music or their music?
I think it's their music.
That's their music.
And by the way, I think that is, if I'm not mistaken, Wagner's Ring. So it's all true. It's Farfel.
Shaft.
Sitting on his shaft. I don't want to see that coming towards me in a dark alley. Jeez Louise.
There's a reason to stay in the
dark alley. Apparently just blew everybody away at the DARPA challenge. People could not believe one robot did all this.
Jeez.
But notice it is tethered.
Well, batteries.
Just
I think
make
controls.
Sure it does become sentient.
Yeah, sentience is what you need.
When it does become sentient, we can at least harness it back. That's what the tether's about.
We had, who do we have on?
They look like the aliens from District 9.
Yeah. Yeah, they do, don't they?
When they're allowed to contribute to presidential campaigns, then we know we're in trouble.
You know, that's a given.
Robots are human.
Who are we talking to? Oh, it was Jeff Hawkins, who founded Palm and now is doing, thinking machines. He said, it's all fine. It's not a big deal. Artificial intelligence is fine. You just can't let them replicate. Just keep that in mind.
Oh, that's all. Just as long as they can't reproduce.
He said, if they can reproduce, it's over.
That's really not comforting in any way at all. That's
just.
Did he really say he was serious?
Yes. It's like saying, just don't give them water after midnight. It everything else will be fine. We've seen this movie. Just whatever you do, don't let them replicate.
I'm just going to go home and watch Battlestar Galactica.
Good thing robots can't manufacture more robots.
Right, because if they could, it's over.
Yeah.
Then you're dead. You might as well go home. Amazon's App Store has 200,000 apps on it now, by the way.
This week in Fear and Loathing.
Why did they remove video calling from Glass? Because nobody used it?
I don't know.
The experience just wasn't that good. And so, ergo,
well.
Not a lot of people used it. And they took it out.
This is where I am at a disadvantage. Because I never did it, so I don't know.
The other issue was, in terms of just calling a contact, you had a list of 10 contacts, and that was it.
Oh.
Mm.
Well, yeah.
It just wasn't a great experience. I think they pulled it because people weren't using it. I don't know. Maybe it'll come back.
I bookmarked this because I just thought this was so good, and I don't know really there's much to say. This will be our last story, and then we'll get to our picks of the week. Internet trolls really are horrible people.
Okay.
Science says new research conducted by Aaron Buckles of the University of Manitoba and two colleagues, sought to investigate whether people who engage in internet trolling are characterized by personality traits that fall in the so-called dark tetrad: Machiavellianism, psychopathy, sadism, and narcissism. Turns out not so narcissistic, but really sadistic. They surveyed these people and asked if they enjoyed what they enjoyed most when online comment sites, when on online comment sites, debating issues that are important to you, chatting with others, making new friends, trolling others and other. And among the people who said they enjoyed trolling, it was a small number, only 5.6%. They really had personality traits for sadism, particularly. You can read the study. It's
that's why you don't feed the trolls.
You don't feed the trolls. Both trolls and sadists, they wrote, feel sadistic glee at the distress of others. Sadists just want to have fun, and the internet is their playground.
I'm working on some curricula, which I'll not talk about today, but talk about another time, involved with engagement in journalism. And I had the great delight of including in the required reading, if I may use this word, assholes a theory.
that's a scholarly paper.
Yes, it's a book. It's a book. It's a very good book.
It's a book.
Yeah, it's a book.
And what is the theory of assholes?
Just kind of why they do what they do.
Yeah. Well, it fits right in, I'm sure.
It does. I mean, and if you're going to deal with the public, you have to know this stuff now.
Because the behaviors are study. Because these behaviors are intrinsically motivating for sadists, comment moderators will likely have a difficult time curbing trolling with punishments. For example, banning users. Ultimately, the allure of trolling may be too strong for sadists, who presumably have limited opportunities to express their sadistic interests in a socially desirable manner.
I mean, is sadism ever socially desirable?
No.
It's more like socially acceptable. You couldn't do in real life what you can do online.
So now you can do it. And it's drawing them in. Machiavellianism, a little bit. Machiavellianism is the willingness to manipulate and deceive others. Narcissism, not so much. Egotism and self-obsession. Psychopathy, the lack of remorse and empathy. But the big one was the pleasure in the suffering of others. That's really the...
That's why if you are suffering at the hand of a troll, you do not let the troll know that that's
right.
That's
because that's what they dig.
Exactly.
That's what they're going for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it also says that I was the big defender of comments early on in newspapers. And I've said this on the show before, where the first problem with comments is it's inherently insulting to the public to say, we will allow you to comment after we're done with our work. We should be more collaborative. But the other problem with comments is that it is just an open space. It was true of forums before. It was true of Newsnet before. An open space, you know, trolls will go and find it and find the opportunity to have this behavior there. And if it doesn't have a purpose, you're going to have this trouble.
See, and I we've talked about this before, is why I bring this up. And I was of the opinion that these are people who were seeking negative attention because they'd received this as children, and this was... they misinterpreted his love. I was giving them a lot of benefit of the doubt. No, it turns out they're just cruel sons of bitches. they're really, no, it's not. They're nasty people. In their study, they found that only about 41% of internet users, actually 41% of internet users don't comment, don't engage online at all. Of the remaining, 59%, only 5.6% are trolls. So it's a small, really, you know, it's a few percentage points. It's maybe one
that's
or two.
All you need. That's all you need.
And we know this. We know that part.
Yeah.
But boy, those 1 or 2% are really effective because they just push those buttons.
Mm-hmm.
They have a test they call GATE, the Global Assessment of Internet Trolling. They ask things that, you know, on a scale of, you know, 1 to 5, do you agree or disagree with this statement? I have sent people to shock websites for the lulls. Anybody in the chat room? Have you ever sent people to shock websites for the lulls? I'm not talking Rickrolling. I'm talking Goatsy, that kind of thing. I like to troll people.
Well, somebody we know and respect once famously did that.
Who's that?
Anil.
Anil? Anil Dash?
He wore a goatsy t-shirt that appeared, I believe, in the New York Times.
In the New York Times, yes.
Right?
Well,
and boy, that and typical for Anil, anything he does, even that, turned into an intellectual discussion.
Oh, of right? course. Of course. Yes, but they, the New York Times photographed him with the t-shirt on, not yes. knowing what it not was, knowing. And published the photo. I mean, that was the prank. It was yes. It was a stylized. It was not clear.
It was.
It was not the actual photo.
It was all
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But so presumably, some people typed in the URL. Right?
That caused a discussion at the time.
It did.
Oh, my Lord.
First time I did a live twit, we did it at the Apple store, and somebody sat down in the audience and hijacked the Wi-Fi router so that all web searches went to Goatsy.
Oh, geez.
And it was really interesting. And if you don't know what Goatsy is, just ask your mom. But it was really interesting because you could see the waves of horror and disgust propagate through the audience as people.
I shouldn't laugh.
And then, but we found him because he's sitting there chortling. It was very easy to figure out who it was.
Well, I mean, aren't there whole blogs dedicated to like taking a photograph of the moment that a person sees?
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
I like to troll, true or false, I like to troll people in forums or the comment sections of websites. Trolls, it turns out, are pretty forthright. They say, yeah, I'm a troll. Yeah, I like to do that. I enjoy griefing other players in multiplayer games. Here's one. This one. The more beautiful and pure a thing is, the more satisfying it is to corrupt.
I'm thinking about Weave.
Poor Weave. He's self-declared troll, right? He's off. He got off, but on a technicality.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the guy who was downloading email addresses of iPad users by discovering a flaw in the AT&T database website.
I mean, he's also the guy that trolled Kathy Sierra.
Oh, he is. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh.
Yeah. And he was horrible. He was horrible to
horrible,
her.
Horrible.
And that's what that last sentence made me think of. The more beautiful and pure a thing is.
So no wonder there's such mixed feelings about him getting off. Now I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a self-proclaimed troll, and I guess he really, really is. I don't want to make this a depressing show. Let me find something.
All right. Here's the I got you. The one about the comics. Comics roast generic techies in SF. I could just read a couple of the gags there.
Okay.
Google
so.
Was going to be involved, but they kind of didn't like the language about it, about things like, you know, I don't know what the joke was, bring your vomit for the bus or something like
God.
That.
Oh, God. Google isn't known for its sense of humor, at least not when it comes to tech backlash. This is from San Francisco Chronicle's site, the SF Gate. That made the stand-up comedy event on Saturday night, The Roast of a Techie, a bit complicated to execute. A real-life Googler, web developer Rico Rodriguez, not famous, sat on a stool on stage to be roasted by a group of comedians at a San Francisco bar. I guess the idea was, let's get it all out here.
Right.
Here's a Googler.
It's a good idea. It's a funny idea.
They should have done it. Kevin Rose, they should have done it to him, at least. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And a Google a cappella group had planned to perform, but when employees double-checked with the company, organizers claim Google didn't take kindly to the language. They didn't, bring your best protest sandals and a carton of eggs, said the flyer. They were concerned for the Googler's safety. I agree, and I like it that Rodriguez had a sense of humor and said, all right, I'm going to try this. It was just, jokes, you know, it's like a roast. Most of the jokes were, you know, like
so below some of the jokes were tame.
Do you ever stay awake at night thinking about the death of Ask Jeeves? Yeah. You're perfect 10 in binary. burn. I think the Google bus is making a Darwinian U-turn. I don't think we should be genetically selecting for Asperger's. Okay. I'm not trying to kick you guys off the bus. I'm trying to get in the bus. It's nicer than my studio and has a better Wi-Fi connection. That's probably true.
So I think Rodriguez then had the best line of the night.
He says, the funny thing is, I'm a front-end developer, which is the equivalent of a beautician. I make buttons look pretty. Yeah, making buttons look pretty for the sake of humanity. Okay.
Well, it wasn't that funny, sorry. It beat Goatsy, but that's not by far.
Yeah.
Did you see the blood moon?
No. I thought that was something on Game of Thrones.
Lunar eclipse a couple of nights ago. Blood red moon. And it was. It was right after Game of Thrones. So I ask you.
Coincidence?
Coincidence? I think not.
Is Silicon Valley right after Game of Thrones?
Yeah. Okay. What do you think? Now you've seen two?
I'm watching it.
I like it. How about you, Jeff Jarvis, television critic?
I thought it was down a bit. I don't know. It's a little broad.
There's some broad stuff. But then there's apparently... Okay, so there's some really in stuff. And I didn't know this, but Mike Elgin told me. That if you watch the second episode, there's a picture from Playboy on the wall in the apartment, in the house. And it turns out, and I don't know how Mike found this out, that it must have read about it. That was the very first JPEG image.
To test the form, right. Yes.
And I remember, if I saw it now, I would recognize it because I do remember that.
Of course, the first JPEG image.
But that's very geeky, right? To have that, you know. I mean, there's so apparently. Well, we'll have to go through it with a fine tooth comb, looking for geeky references like that. I like it.
I don't dislike it. I'm just not sure.
It's not. I think it's smarter than I thought it would be. It's not that reality show. It's much better than that.
That reality show is not even
a sitcom, but it's funnier than that roast. Frankly.
Sorry, I tried. You wanted to lighten it up. It's all I had available. You want me to go on the Germans again, huh? Oh, I can do that. I would prefer that.
More Germans. Do you, since you make a Twitter analysis tool, what's the story with Gannip? Is that a big deal that Twitter buys Gannip? That was the last company, one of the few companies that had the fire hose, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'd forgotten that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big a deal. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think that Twitter has peaked on clients and is now, I think that they're definitely interested in analytics.
Does it threaten you?
No. Not at all. I don't know. Maybe to my detriment. I really don't pay attention to what other people are doing. I have a very pretty clear vision of what we want to do, and we're different. We're a totally different product.
I don't think Google would do what you're doing. I mean, Twitter would do what you're doing. I think they should know analytics, but it's going to be for advertising. Here's the question.
It was an independent third party that has feeds of...
It had the fire hose. It had the total feed. Very few of
many players, too, not just Twitter. Now that Twitter owns them, what impact does that have in terms of sources of social data?
Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, don't know. I have the chat room is, of course, sending me the image of the first JPEG.
Oh,
let me see before you show this. No, yeah, you can show this because they didn't show the nudity. But look for this picture on the.
Oh yeah, God, yeah.
Remember that?
How many times have I seen that? Yeah.
There's no nudity in it. It's just the first November 1972 Playboy. It's their best-selling issue ever, sold 7 million copies.
Wow.
Yeah. And the picture is of a Swedish woman named Lena Soderberg. She's now married with 3 kids and has a job with the state liquor monopoly. She's pleasantly amused by what has happened to her picture. I was just looking to think up, and this is Ben Grubb, a verified user, just followed me. That's great news. He's deputy tech editor at the Sydney Morning Herald. Hello, Ben. Cool. Thank you for following
me. Yeah, what am I?
So you wouldn't know about that, right? I retweeted Dr. Kiki, and 3 times the people. I guess you're instead of just raw numbers now, you're just giving multiples.
Yeah. We changed it up. In fact, there's a huge bug on your stream here, Leo. 126,319 times more people.
Well, this guy doesn't have many Twitter followers.
Yeah, that is not something that one would say in conversation. Like our goal with the copy is to make it very humanize it, right?
It makes me feel damn fine, though.
But no one would say that in conversation. So we have to change that copy to more than 100,000 times more people.
There you go. More than 100. See? That's why I'm a beta tester. yes, 2 interesting people followed me last week in my tweets. Wow, look at this one. This was the tweet that I did. My number one tweet was my verification tweet for Keybase.io. Do you know about that?
Yes, I do. I'm a terrible person. I have an invite and I haven't set it up.
Do it. It's really easy.
Yeah. Is it? Did you like it?
Yeah. I'll show you real quickly. We were giving you a plug, but I'll just quickly deviate.
Oh, that's fine.
So it's keybase.io. It's founded by the two guys who did OK Cupid, but this is not a monetary proposition. The idea of this, and let me just log in real quickly to my account. The idea of this is to make it easy to do a few things. One, to do PGP crypto, open public key cryptography. But the other, to find people's key, public key, in a auditable, verifiable directory. So when you sign up for this, here, and I'll show you my page. When you sign up for this, you publish, as I did, that tweet that verifies that it's me. And I also, you put a little GitHub gist up, and you can also put a link, put some text on your website. And that proves that you're this person, the person who owns that Twitter account, that GitHub account, and that website. And then that's my public key. So if you wanted to send me private stuff, you could actually use their website because it uses JavaScript. But you can also install Node.js on your terminal and then do all of this from the terminal, which is kind of cool.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And so then I can send you an encrypted message.
Well, you know, I used Pastebin and then sent an encrypted message, a link to an encrypted message on Twitter. And that was kind of fun.
Fun.
Yeah, they're just little things you can do. I like the idea. It's a very beta. You have to get an invitation right now. They say, and you know, we don't recommend you you encrypt stuff using in browser crypto. But if you're sure that we haven't been tortured into serving you custom targeted JavaScript, and your browser is clean and your life doesn't depend on it, you can do it within the browser, but you can also easily do it from the command line. Installing Node.js turns out to be a very simple thing to do, at least on a Macintosh. And then you have this command line capability of encrypting and decrypting and verifying. But most importantly, this is a directory. So once Gina's in this, I can search for Gina and I could get her public key. Now, there are existing directories like that. MIT runs one, whether PGP runs one. There's quite a few. But this is kind of pretty. And they do verification. See, part of the problem with PGP, or GNU Privacy Guard, which is the open source implementation of PGP, is that anybody can create a key. People have created a key with my name and email in it. It's a phony key. You can't, you know, it doesn't do you any good, but it's a way to grief somebody because keys are unsigned. So you're supposed to have signing parties where you all get together and you sign each other's keys. But this, what this does is use these public verification procedures to create a key that is somewhat trustworthy. So I think that's it's a good idea. It's very easy to use.
Yeah. I'm going to get up off my behind and sign up for it.
And then I'll track you. One of the things that happens is you track people, and then it will let you know if something goes wrong and their keys change or whatever. So it's kind of a way of like following them.
Cool.
It's cool. I think it's a neat idea. Back to ThinkUp. Anyway, so that was my most popular tweet.
That was your big tweet. So you were verifying by tweeting. Okay, so you were getting a bunch of replies or favorites.
Look at Chad got a big tweet. What was that?
Yeah, that was at the convention.
Oh, at Comic.
At PAX. And yeah, I knew that I was going to have some crazy stuff. So I ran quickly to ThinkUp to.
That's neat. Isn't that fun to see that?
Yeah, it was really fun. And I also got a lot more followers. So like people. A lot of followers, you know, have retweeted, and I gained some more ones, and it was really cool to run over and check ThinkUp every day and see what's going on.
Yay! Awesome.
Love it. And it's also positive. It rewards you for,
yes,
you know. Whatever Leo Laporte said in the past week must have been memorable.
Well, you know, we have that one insight where it's how much you've been talking about yourself, and it sort of implies that you're a narcissist or an egotist, and we get a lot of feedback about that because it's kind of out of line with the rest of the rest of the messages are pretty positive.
It just reminds you to stop using I, me, and mine.
I think that's a positive impact on the
Did you take that out?
We didn't take it out. We did reword. We added in a few different headlines because each one of these headlines are sort of not to you know, do the sausage making, but each of the headlines kind of alternates and rotates. So we added in a few others that were both positive and neutral. And then we still have the but enough about me. But there actually is, and we post this on our blog, I mean, there is some research that shows that people who post status updates about themselves the most get less engagement. Right. Like, people find it a little off-putting. Right. So there is a reason why we point it out.
So is that your goal a little bit with ThinkUp, is to make you a better Twitter user?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the idea is that, like, these networks give us these amazing superpowers, right? It's just like technology. Technology gives us these amazing superpowers, and you can use them for good or not so good, or not use them well at all. And so, yeah, the idea of ThinkUp is really just to become more mindful about how you spend your time in these networks and what sort of messages you're putting out there and what's happening with your connections and what your impact is. So when you retweet Dr. Kiki, you know, what does that mean?
Right.
Really, that kind of thing. So it's I don't know, not to get all like woo-woo and zen, but it's about sort of mindfulness and awareness. And it is kind of about behavior change, too.
It's worked because I've tweeted a lot more than I did before I started using ThinkUp. And
I'm
more
glad.
Constructively, yeah.
I'm glad. Well, you've got a huge audience, so.
Yeah, you got it. I have one. Jeff Jarvis replied to Arctic Tony 12 times last week. We were having a conversation. Mm-hmm. And then it says, time having good conversation is time well spent. Thanks, Mom. And then right below that, it has a big 3 minutes. What is the 3 minutes?
You know, wow. we did sort of an off-the-cuff estimation of about how long it takes to post a tweet. We guessed about 15 to 20 seconds, and we just add them up.
Oh, that was the aggregate time of the conversation. Well, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's funny, if you click that link, it takes you right to Goatsy. So that's kind of a little Easter egg in there. You know?
Oh, my gosh. If Anil has buried a Goatsy link somewhere in the source code and it passed my code review, that would be amazing.
He's obfuscated. It's an obfuscated Goatsy. It's all in hex, so you would... You won't see it. Is that site still around? I don't think so.
I don't even.
What are you laughing at, Chad?
Like it would disappear. Like someone would delete it from the internet. They delete the Goatsy image from the internet. I don't even want to look at. You were Googling it. I don't want to look at your screen.
I actually tried to find recently that I couldn't find, classic internet. Oh, the dude who was like dancing in front of his webcam. Oh, what was the name of that guy?
Numa Numa Kid.
The Numa Numa Kid. It's hard to find.
Because
the,
there's so many. Yeah,
video.
Yeah, that's pretty much always. No, there's Goatsy is not doing Goatsy anymore.
Well,
they've got a Doge address. They want Dogecoin.
I mean, it was always.
You're taking a chance showing it.
Yeah, so. I was, yeah. It's just an image.
Yeah, like, it used to be just an image.
It wasn't like a URL.
No, it is a URL.
Well, I mean, it could be, but...
No, it always wasn't a URL.
I guess...
You know what the SE stands for?
I guess
You just didn't know.
No, I guess I experienced it in, like, Second Life. And, right. Like, other instances where it didn't have to be
a
URL.
It was a URL.
Yeah, I mean, you
because
could do
the
it,
SE
you do it on an
for
image
sex.
Forum. You do it on...
Yeah, yeah. But
right.
There was a site, which is no longer Goatsying.
Right.
In fact, it seems like it has an ad. It says, a message from the Goatsy lawyer. I think that maybe it was taken down. Should I play this? It's on YouTube. It can't be bad.
Turning to Goatsy.cx. I have some good news and some bad news for you about Goatsy.cx. I just got out of a meeting with the Goatsy.cx.
I have a feeling there's going to be something.
I know.
There's something on this. It's on YouTube, though. They couldn't do that on YouTube.
We're unable to show the Goatsy image.
He just said, handed down by the island stage, we have of no the domain registrar.
Yeah, CX is a, where is CX?
The case simply cannot be taken to a higher court of law.
Because there is no
Needless
higher
to
court
say,
of law.
He was devastated by this news.
Okay, that's enough. our show today. And by the way, as our chat mods are saying, please do not post links to Goatsy in the chat. What's wrong with you people? Leave it to the professionals.
Oh, so Numa Numa is a while ago. Now I'm going to look for Numa Numa.
Oh, I can find it. What you do is you search for original Numa Numa right on YouTube or like that. Oh, you always say, if you put original, doesn't that work, Chad, usually?
I mean, sometimes. The thing was is that it existed before YouTube. And so, I mean, I think Albino Black Sheep is probably is the most
Here's
reputable.
A digitally remastered, and it has an ad for share file on it. So you know it's good.
You
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, you guys. It's totally the first result. It's like the top of the Google search results. I don't know.
But see, like, this is a rip from
other
flash.
It's like Dancing Baby. That was pre-YouTube, too.
Yes.
Which now, we're going to get pulled down because of this song. I'm just...
What's impressive is that you could have a viral video before there was a YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine how much harder that was in the old days.
Yeah.
Kids today, you got it easy.
The Dancing Baby was a gift, right?
I think so, yeah. The whole idea of the Dancing Baby was
I almost said GIF.
It's okay. You say it any way you want.
Thank you.
No, you don't.
It's Jotsi. No, the...
it's Gosai.
Gosai. The Dancing Baby was a project file on some 3D program way, 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 way back when, like in the early 90s or the mid 90s. And I remember we played it on the site in 1992. I mean, this is like almost before the internet. I remember on Ally McBeal, the TV show on Ally McBeal, she kept seeing the Dancing Baby.
The Dancing Baby, right, it was Ally McBeal.
Right.
My God.
But it predates, it was the early 90s. That's for that to be viral. I mean, what did you had to send it around on a video on a VCR tape? How did you
let me run this DVD over to you? This floppy
you
disk
that
over
viral?
To your house.
Yeah. So go ahead and try to find that on YouTube. I think there are quite a few Dancing Babies, but the original, I don't know. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Personal Capital, who invite you to live richly. It is okay. It is really okay to take the fruit of your labor. Save it, put it away, invest it so that you have something to live on in your old age. There's nothing wrong with that. It's called wealth building, and it is a good thing to do. And I want to share with you a free and secure tool that helps you do that. First of all, it gets all of your stuff together in one place. That's always a challenge because you got multiple accounts with your mortgage, your savings, your investments, they're all over the place with different websites, different logins. So all you do is you set it up on Personal Capital. You'll get these beautiful dashboards. They'll show you exactly where your money is, where it's going, how much you're making. It helps you make sure you're not overpaying your broker or your investment advisor, helps you allocate your assets appropriately, gives you tailored advice, reduce your fees, save money, calculate how much you're going to need to retire. All of this can be done very easily and for free. PersonalCapital.com/twig. PersonalCapital.com/twig. You can't count on Social Security taking care of you in your old age. You need to plan for the future. You young people, you listen. Wish I'd done it in the early days. PersonalCapital.com/twig. Try it today. Absolutely free. Are they very aggressive, the Maya Haha people?
Numa Numa? I don't think so.
About takedowns?
Just the algorithm will get you.
Oh, the algorithm's aggressive.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gina Trapani has our tip of the week.
Google Search now does public transit directions, like right in the search results. Of course, this works mostly well in big cities like here. But if I do a search for 2409 Fulton Street by train, that's the Brooklyn Shake Shack, by the way. Google search results will know my current location and will tell me that I need to get on the F train and go, which is pretty cool. Right there inside the knowledge graph.
That's cool.
I guess that would be considered the knowledge graph. And it'll give you different, as you can see in the screenshot here, it'll give you different routes, tell you what time you're leaving. It's pretty awesome.
Nice.
And good for the
earth. Now I want to go to Shake Shack.
But now Google knows where you're going. They know where you are, where you want to go.
Oh,
they
shut
know
up.
Too much.
I want Google to know everything about me so I can get Google Now cards all the time. You know what really frosts me is people who complain about Google is invading their privacy and then say, and Google Now just really isn't useful. Come on. Come on. You got some numbers, Jeff Jarvis.
All right, I got one. One of my favorite apps in the whole world is Waze. I depend upon it greatly.
I use it
to drive into work. For those of you in New Jersey, the Bridge and Delaware crowd, the Pulaski Skyway is closed for 2 years, and it's torture. It's hell. I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm really using Waze now, but it also is a social act. You share things on it, which I think is really important. It's how we should think of news. So there's a feature on them here, like here, which I found just two numbers in here, which I found interesting. There are 80,000 active Waze users around London. So on that basis, it's enough people to get a lot of really good data. My other favorite number here, pardon me, I should turn off my microphone, is that Waze has 1,000 times more map editors than it has employees. It has 140,000 volunteer map editors and 140 employees.
Does that mean somebody, like, I mean, I'm a map editor, you're a map editor. Every time you see an accident or a cop hiding behind a billboard, you press that button.
No, I think it's that you're actually trying to fix the map.
Fixing the maps. Wow, that's even, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
That's a lot.
That's not including the people who report accidents and things like that.
No, because that's so easy to do. And
oh, I would expect every Waze user does that.
Yeah.
I love
especially
Waze.
Stock.
I when love are we going to see more of it in Google Maps? Google owns it. Let's get into that Maps
well,
there.
They talk in the story about how they still really are independent to a great measure.
Silly.
Well, I don't use Google Maps when I'm driving. I use Waze. I use Google Maps to find stuff, but I use Waze to navigate.
I am a.
I'm going to Florida. Pardon
yes,
one more
thing. I think the Google Maps will tell you to get in the ocean and swim south.
I will take with me. I now take with me not only my charger, but I also take with me the little thing. I got this great little tiny thing. You know the things you used to have to use to plug in a phone to your car. There are these huge, gigantic things that look like those robots.
Yeah.
What I have, I bought the Apple Store. It's a simple little thing. It has a rubber thing in the back. You put into the vent. And then it has this one little thing that squeezes out like that, and you put the phone in it, and that's that. So I take it with me for rental cars now.
Yeah, because every car has a vent.
Exactly.
And you find that's yeah. I've seen those. Is it pretty solid?
It's very solid. It's so much better than that other kludgy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah the suction
Thanks.
Cups that you put on. Those are, in fact, those are illegal in many states. You can't, you know, put something suctioned on the window and all that stuff.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if it's illegal in Brooklyn. Nothing's illegal. You could put anything you want in your windows in Brooklyn.
You got a problem
Large
with that?
Large sugary drinks.
Dingo balls, fuzzy dice, whatever you want up there. Just decorate those windshields.
Godfather horns.
What is that? What is that? How does that? How would that go?
Yeah, this song. It's the song from Godfather. Oh, yeah. Hey, you go to certain neighborhoods down in Bensonhurst. Oh, yeah.
Really? Godfather horns?
Oh, yeah. Wait.
See, here it's La cucaracha.
My wife was truly freaked when we first moved here. She was like, whoa.
That's not, it's a weird, I want a Godfather horn. Hey, out of the way. It's good.
It's threatening.
Threatening. That scares the stuff out of me. Let me show you my tip, and it's really not for everybody. I've talked a lot about Sonos. We love Sonos here. We have Sonos everywhere. It's a wireless sound system, and they have a lot of different music things. They finally added Google Play Music. I'm so happy. Google Play Music, I guess now it's $10 a month, but $7.99 a month for all the music in the world. But it also uploads all of your music, so every song I have is on Google Play, and now I can play it through my wireless speakers. Plus, Google Play Music has a very good radio capability. In fact, I was listening to this the other day, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame winning songs. And so I pumped it to my Sonos, played it throughout the house. It was so great. I love it. So if you have Sonos,
they worked with Google. They worked with Google. Like, Google whitelisted them. They're not using the casting protocol.
They're doing something interesting. Yeah.
Which is interesting.
You know, on iPhone, you can play any content that's on your iPhone into the Sonos. You can't yet do that on Android, and I don't know what's holding that up. That would be nice. A Sonos looks like a castable device. I've never tried casting to it, but I see it all the time in AllCast.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, friends.
Well, now it is. I mean, now it's a castable device with this update, right? Now it is.
Does that make it castable?
Fine. Yeah, because in Google Play Music, you tap the cast button. Is it only Play Music? I can't imagine that they would limit it to that.
Oh, you're right.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
Because I think that it is the standard implementation. I don't know. I don't have a Sonos, but I think it's the standard. Like, it's just the cast button that you tap.
Well, I'm on my... This one's tied to my Sonos at home.
Mm.
But yeah, see, though, so you're in Google Play Music, and you can cast to your Sonos, which is wild. Love it.
Hear your neighbors and start playing music now.
We were rocking out today, and I don't think our neighbors complained. The peacocks might have minded it. Friends, well, wait a minute. Paulie Walnuts, Godfather Carhorn, ladies and gentlemen. Andy Williams does it. Wait a minute. Let's Paulie Walnuts, who was on The Godfather. Let's check this out. After this ad in 4 seconds, an ad for Bitcoin. Wow, I've never seen that before. Oh, so this is actually on The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, that's the meat market on The Sopranos.
Satriali's Pork Store Cafe. That's in Brooklyn, isn't it? No.
No, that's in Jersey.
Jersey, that's right. Verona, it's all Jersey.
Jersey, mm-hmm. Jeez.
Jersey. I'm sorry. Should know better. Here he goes, Paulie Walnuts. He's going to beep the horn. Come on, beep the horn, Paulie. Remember this episode. Hey, I'm walking here. Gina Terpani comes to us from Brooklyn. She comes by it honest. She was born there. She's
none of this hyper gentrification stuff.
No,
I was born here,
no,
okay?
No.
1975, people.
Yeah,
born here.
Yeah.
Don't take her glass off, man.
Yeah.
Leave her glass alone.
Yeah, don't mess with my glass. I got your glass.
I was born right by the Saturday Night Fever dance club. So
kick you in the glass, yeah. She, thinkup.com, that's her place to go. Go there, sign up, subscribe. It's very useful and wonderful, and I love it.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thanks very much.
Her blog,
great show today. Lots of fun.
Doesn't show up anymore, is smarterware.org. She also hosts a couple of other shows. I don't like to talk about it, but all right. She's every Tuesday night, she's on All About Android. Okay.
That's a lot of fun.
And then In Beta on some other network.
Oh, no, not anymore. Not anymore.
You stopped?
Not anymore. I stopped. Kevin is still doing the show. Kevin Purdy's still doing the show.
Good.
He's a new co-host. It was totally amicable. I just got busy with ThinkUp.
Yeah, so, you're busy. I'm glad you didn't get too busy for us. Thank you.
I couldn't give up my weekly tech therapy session.
No.
There you guys.
All right. We need you. We need you, Gina. Otherwise, it's just two grumpy old men. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York, a dignified professorial person. Get your pipe. You can find him on Google Plus, as you can find all of us, and buzzmachine.com.
Well, I look dignified now.
No. No. Oh, so you have, these are the eyeglass, the spectacle versions. Yeah. I don't know. It still looks stupid to me. Just me. It's just me. Although, if you were in the same room, I would rip them off your head, smash them on the ground. No, don't do that, folks. It's not nice. Thank you for joining us.
Looms! Looms are ruining the world!
Looms! This show is... you're referring to Ned Ludd.
Yes.
The original Luddite, who was a weaver and did not like the new automated loom technology of 1752.
He has a movement named after him. I want the Jarvisicians.
The Jarvisicians! That's good. We'll figure out what that means. It has to do with
farfel technology.
Nugan thing. Thank you for joining us. We do the show 1 p.m. when I don't fall asleep at the switch and let Paul Theroux and Mary Jo Foley just talk forever. I apologize for the late start. 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 2000 UTC on twit.tv. Please tune in and watch live if you can. Then you'll see all the good stuff that we edit out later. But if you want the expurgated version, please get the download, audio and video available at twit.tv/twig or wherever finer netcasts are aggregated. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.